That was the time the goat chewed the top off, wasn't it?
Fell through.
It fell through it?
Yeah.
Well, it was a convertible, wasn't it?
It was an old, old car with a canvas top.
Leather canvas top.
Canvas.
But I remember he had an old Erskine. That
was his new car.
Right, and he would call me when he got down here.
This is Lester we're talking about.
By the cemetery, the old Catholic cemetery here. Can you come out and hook on the man and pull me off to the dairy? The snow is too deep. I guess he got out and walked halfway down and then found out it was too deep to drive, so I came in with my truck and I'd hook on to him and pull him in. He'd take his truck and get it loaded, and by that time, if the snow had drifted in, I'd hook a tractor on and pull him to town. Well, pulled him all, for that matter, a lot of them, didn't we?
You never missed, did you? Even the biggest blizzards?
Never missed one day. I don't remember. Have we?
Well, I missed one day being out of the dairy early.
No, I mean to get my truck into town. As long as I was there, we never missed. At the end there, when we got that cat, that was the best time, because we dropped the blade down on that and give me about 6 inches clearance, and I'd pull them right through, and the trucks would follow through in the path of the tracks. But we never missed any.
Well, it was long before your day when we had wagons and horses.
Yeah.
And Collie Road was flooded, and the ice blocks were floating over the road. And a couple of guys, this was about 1917, a couple of guys got in hip loops and led the horses, kicked the ice away, and the water was up to the bottom of the wagon.
Yeah, right. Well, that same thing happened down there when, was it Dave Collins? He lost a shoe and an overshoe, and the front end of his car went down in the culvert when they have all washed out. I think it was Gilbert went down there. And we hooked onto it and pulled it out backwards, and we turned around and pulled it right straight across after we got him up out of the hole. He never did find that shoe.
Oh, we got Lily.
Then you and Lily pull a kid out from under the culvert?
I think that's wrong.
You got that story.
I know the story. I don't know if I have it on tape.
Well, we won't talk about that one now.
You want to talk about them?
Yeah, well, I'll read you this and you'll get the... See, here's Irv telling about, commenting on the Ed Papp garbage story.
Well, I just came back from a fire and I had my red light and my siren and everything on the car. And I seen a woman stop just a little beyond my house. And she had a nice brand new car. She got out and she threw a peck sack full of garbage out in the ditch. Well, I swung right in behind her and I threw my red light on her. She didn't know whether I was a cop or who I was. So I told her, I says, you either pick that up and you clean the rest of the ditch or I'm turning you in. I said, I got your license number. Well, it was the cleanest ditch I've ever seen from here to the dairy and back. She cleaned both sides. When she left for town, she had her trunk lid way up. She couldn't even shut it. With beer cans and bottles.
Okay, that's going to get in the book.
she couldn't
even
Let's just be sure.
She was quite a prominent lady.
Yes, she was, and I knew her, too.
You can't remember her name now, but it was just shocking.
She even belonged to our church, remember?
We got her name and address and all. She was really...
Oh, I was really upset over that. It shook me up so bad, I just hear her dump it right out here in front of my head.
She shook her up, too.
Oh, boy. But she couldn't even shut the trunk lid down. It was so full.
Let's just be sure.
Oh, that's a marvelous story.
Because you've got it written up that they dumped a bunch of tin cans.
Well, Irv, when did you first come to the farm?
In February of 1947.
February 47. Mm-hmm. And when was the...
48.
48. Because, Irby was the first boy that was born on the farm, wasn't it? That lived there.
Well, you mean of any employee?
Yeah.
Oh, no, we had others before that.
I don't know what Grandpa was telling her about.
In the big house.
What?
In the homestead house. Yeah. Right. The grassy shelf, I can used to come out with them through the plane, go up there and see them every morning.
Oh, yeah.
Well, were you in the big house?
Mm-hmm. But I can remember, you know, how Grandpa yelled. You know, he didn't know how loud he was yelling. Well, he wanted to go up and see her. He'd go up and see him, but he'd wake him up because he'd yell at him, you know.
Mm-hmm. What would he say?
Well, just playing with him.
Yeah, but I mean, do you remember the sorts of things Grandpa said?
She could probably.
Do you remember, Olive?
He always used to come in every morning, though, say good morning, and he was still sleeping. He'd go upstairs to look at that boy. I'd have to be going up and get him. Kind of made his day, I think.
Yeah, I remember I was the first guy that smoked there. He said, as long as I smoked in the garage, I was all right. But I couldn't smoke nowhere in the yard or anywhere around the barns or any place, you know. So he can.
He probably wasn't the first one, but the first one that did it.
In front of him. Anyhow, he come and asked her one day if it bothered her to let him know.
If it bothered you, if your smoking bothered Olive?
Yeah.
To let him know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He was my buddy.
Oh, yeah, he was a dear old guy.
Well, can you remember any specific incidents with Grandpa? Anything?
Yep. When I first started to work there.
Uh-huh.
I come in there and I was doing some welding. And he come to me and he says, Irv, I want to give you $20 a month. Raise. As you go and tell Ron. So I went up and I told Ron, and it wasn't only a couple of weeks later, I was doing it again or something in the garage, and he said, I want to give you another raise, because you're deserving of it. So he told me to go up and see Ron, tell him. So I guess the second or the third time I went up to see Ron, he says, who are you working for anyhow?
And I said, Ron said that?
Yeah. And I says to him, I says, well, I just soon worked for Grandpa. He paid more money. I won't forget that as long as I live.
It was Ron that hired you?
Oh, sure.
And Grandpa that raised you, huh?
Yeah, but the best part was how he hired me. I came in there, come up there, and Ron was working in the seed house. And he had an old felt hat on, an old leather jacket on. Now, who in the hell is that bum, you know, working there?
This is Ron or W.J.?
No, this was Ron.
Okay.
He looked worse than the employees. You know, I mean, he was dressed.
No,
he just grab anything and put it on.
Okay.
No offense, Ron. I mean, I just...
Okay, this is a good story.
Anyhow...
Get on with it.
He says to me, he says, I asked him about a job. I asked who Ron Dogan was, and the guys told me who he was. And so I went over and talked to him. He said, well, wait just a minute. He says, I got to go down the office, but I got to go in and change clothes. So he says, you can give me a ride down. So I waited for him till he changed his clothes, and gee, he come out all nice and dressed up. I took him down the office. On the way down, he says, well, I don't know for sure whether I need a guy or not. He says, well, I told him about my deal. I had to get my house trailer off in the street. I was parked downtown. Well, he says, you can drag out the house trailer and park it out here, and if you like it or if you don't, like, you can pull out. Well, the next day it snowed, and I took an old spare route truck and went out after Johnny Sapp. He was hauling milk. And I don't remember, I think it was George Palmer's where he was stuck. Didn't we pick up milk there?
No.
And I got him out of the snowbank and got him back on the road again. I come back to the dairy and I put the truck away. And I didn't even know I was hired or not yet, really. Well, anyhow, I stayed there 21 years. So I don't know.
So you figure you must have been hired, huh?
Yeah. That's the way I was hired out, wasn't it? Don't you remember?
Well, when you first, how long did it take you to tumble that Dad was who he was? They pointed him out to you?
Oh, yeah. There was the guys in there putting up seats for him. Told me who he was. I went over and started talking to him.
You say that you came in 40...
48.
48.
February.
So my father only died, lived a year about it. He died in April.
He died in 51, wasn't it?
No, April 49. 49.
Was it 49?
April 30th.
And it was just a year then.
49.
Do you remember any other bits about Grandpa in that year?
Yeah. He bought a Dodge car.
Blue.
I don't recall the color anymore.
It was blue, go on.
But anyhow, I had to put a governor on it because he would step on the foot feed and he threw the rods all out of it. First mm-hmm. thing. So I had to overhaul the whole motor and go through the same thing all over again until I got a governor on it. Then he was pretty good. But he come in to me one day, he went to Janesville, him and Grandma. And he says, I don't know what's wrong with this car, Ruth. He says, it's heating up terrible. And so I checked everything all out and I couldn't find nothing wrong with it. And come to find out, here he drove all the way to Janesville and back in low gear. He didn't know it.
Come here.
No, he didn't know how hard the motor was racing, so he didn't realize that it was at any speed.
And Grandma didn't know because she didn't know how to drive.
No, right. She didn't know what he was doing.
Oh.
But anyhow, when I checked it all out, I found there was nothing wrong with it. So I asked him how he shifted. That was a fluid drive Dodge.
I was going to say a low fluid drive, but yeah. It had a low gear, and then you go into fluid
yeah,
drive.
Yeah, then you go into fluid drive, and it would have been all right, but he didn't push it up. Well, he was a great old guy.
Grandpa? Ron, how about telling us about when Grandma learned to drive? Great-grandma.
Well, I don't remember too much about it, except when she was going to learn to drive, and this was before your time. And so Grandpa took her out to teach her to drive, and that went along for a while, and then Grandma suddenly quit driving, would never drive again. And it was months and months before I found the story of why she could quit driving. Seemed that she'd hit, seemed she'd hit a cow.
Oh.
And it could have been a very big cow because the car went right up on top of the cow and came to rest on top of the cow. The car went over on the cow. And it killed the cow and Grandpa paid for the cow and got the car home. And nobody said anything about it, but Grandma decided she didn't want to drive anymore.
So she never learned.
Well, no. Anything else? Oh yeah, he used to come in every time he'd want something welded. He used to ask me if I could get this soldered in a hurry.
Soldered?
Yeah, everything was soldered.
I remember a machine we made that was great joy to all of us younger guys on the farm. Pete Klinkhammer and Johnny Sapp, a little older. It was right after the war and hard to get equipment. And you saw a picture of an elevator in a magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And it was $1,000 or $1,400. You couldn't get them to start with. Secondly, it was way too much money when you had a bunch of high school clowns that could throw the bales at them to set up with them. And yeah, that was a magnificent machine.
Why haven't you still got that?
Still got that. Sure.
Have you?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Oh, that was my pride and joy. Mm-hmm. I remember I took I don't know how many reduction gears to get at the right speed so they wouldn't go to beat
hell.
Yeah, beat hell. And I had to get it so I could just slow it down so I could put at least 5 bags on it, or 6, to get them up in the truck, and then it wouldn't be too hard for a guy to pick them off. Well, then I didn't know that was too fast. So I had to slow it down still more so it could run continuously so nobody'd have to stand beside it. They just dump him on there and throw him, and the guy'd catch him up in the truck. So we had about five, six bag spacing between it. And that worked really good. We loaded trucks.
They're still using it.
And stacked with it and everything.
Well, boy, for the baled hay, particularly in the first ones in the morning, the last ones in the evening, as they picked up moisture and got so heavy we could hardly lift them, it was a godsend.
Yeah, right. And the highest priced thing on there was the belt. Remember, I had to go up to Northern Belt Company in Janesville before I found one wide enough or long enough to be all in one piece. And I think that was about $60 for that damn belt alone, wasn't it?
The rest you made out of angle iron. And
everything I could find in the farm. Oh, I did buy, I guess I bought an electric motor for it, didn't I? I don't remember. Oh yeah, then I made a can washer, or a case washer too, for in the dairy. It was hard to find one, so Ron took me down there.
For washing the milk cases?
Yeah, for washing all of the empty cases.
Uh-huh.
Where did we go that day?
Yeah.
And you spotted it right away, and you said, I'd sure like to have one of these. And we bought another bottle washer. So I said, well, we've got it all made. I says, I'll use the old bottle washer pump that we had that we was using at the time. And I said, I'd have to make up some sprays and some jets, because I made one of those for spraying corn. A boom. Remember that? The first one we had? And so I took them same jets out of there and used them in the case washer, only I had to drill a hole to figure in so that I could get more water capacity out. So we put caustic and lye and hot water. I even had a hot water steam valve in there so we could heat the tank of water. And it circulated all the time.
Herb, do you remember the time that you and Gil and Steve Ferguson and I shingled the roof in a big barn?
Oh yeah.
We fried the eggs up there. I've got a movie of that.
Have you really?
Yeah.
You mean the ladies' lounge or the other one?
The barn at up on the hill.
Oh, farm. Yeah, way up on the hill.
Not the hill farm, but
your dad's place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Craig says it was so hot up there, you fellas decided you could fry an egg, so you went and got eggs and fried them.
I took a movie of it.
Well, you could have right down there on this one of the ladies' lounge that I built last.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice deal. That was a good barn. Remember, I drawed all the plans out for it, and you and I drove to Madison to see Mr. Wetzel in the university. And the only thing that was wrong with the whole thing, I had 3 2x8s to go across the doorways. And he says, you take those out and put 2 2x12s in there. And there's nothing wrong with the rest of the whole building. And I thought he was kind of a little bit off, you know, taking 3 out and putting 2 in there. The only difference was it was 4 inches deeper. And so he explained it to us, to the snow load when it got on the roof, that the 2 2x12s would carry more than 3 2x8s, and it was the same inch circumference around the thing.
Well, this was the lounge, wasn't it? It was figured for square foot per cow. The ladies would be appropriately comfortable and sheltered.
Well, actually, all we built it for was to get them out of the weather, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so they could live outdoors all winter.
All winter, yeah, because somebody told that it was healthier for the cow to stay out than to have them put in at night and put back out in the daytime, and they'd catch cold and this and that. And so this was all open on the east side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't have room in the barn anyway.
Yeah, right.
Right,
so that was one reason why we built it. And that was 44 feet across it inside. What was it, 160 feet long?
Sounds about right.
About that, I think they're 180 feet long. But I remember we got more concrete below the ground than we had above the ground on that. And then we put all the boards on it vertical. And I put girts across to carry the boards. So in case the wind tore them off, it wouldn't be too expensive to change them. You know, our cows or the manure loader, because they knocked a lot of them off the manure loader. But as that manure built up in there, that building was really warm.
Mm-hmm.
It never was really cold in there at any time. In fact, I don't remember it ever freezing the manure in there, did it?
No. The only difficulty with that building was when we got a little too many cows.
Yeah.
Then we'd bring down a new heifer, fresh heifer, for the herd. And the older cows would crowd her out, and here she'd be shoved out in 20 degrees low weather. It only happened 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
But she'd freeze a tit or something of that sort.
Yeah.
The older cows wouldn't give her space inside. She'd be on the outskirts of it.
Yeah, we had a lot of good times.
I remember the seed processing building being built. And I have a picture of you and Gil, I think Ferguson again, and Dad. Just as you were, the whole bunch is beginning to pour the, you dug the very deep part where the bottom of the machine.
Down where the elevator was going to go.
Yeah. Now, how much of that was done by the whole farm staff? Did you make your own cement, Dad, or was the cement brought in? Or?
We hired Ludi to bring the cement to us.
But
we put up our own forms.
But just about everything else was done then?
By us. Was
pretty quickly.
What was there?
We had a carpenter from Rock, from Gainesville.
Right, Mr. Young. Mr. Young. D. Young. By the way,
we got a carload of big lumber from the West Coast, Douglas Fir.
Yeah, right.
For our 2x8s and 30 feet long.
Yeah, we got some 30 foot footers because that's 45 feet right to the peak. And the roof is, what do you call it? In other words, a square. Right. What would you call it?
Right angle.
Yeah.
Well, the
pitch of the roof.
There's no hip on the roof.
No, right. The pitch of it is, 45 degree pitch, wouldn't it be?
I think it was 45.
But I remember that, because when we put the shingles on that, we had to tie a rope around us, then throw the rope over the building and tie it to a truck on the other side, so you wouldn't slide down. Because you could have fell off, and you couldn't walk it, no way. You remember that? We had an old dump truck on the other side, we'd tie it to it.
There weren't a lot of trauma on the farm that I recall. Other than Grandpa breaking his leg that time. The only remarkable one I remember was in 1930.
Grandpa breaking his leg?
Story last night on the horse. Red Richardson was cranking a Jerry built Jeep that Ed Path had made, and this was just before I went to Arizona, so it would have been 1943. And it was getting cold, and then he cranked it, and he went and broke his arm.
Red's arm?
Red's arm. All the way down to the hospital, and he said, "That damn son of a bitch Jeep, that son of a bitch Jeep." That's the worst I ever heard Red. He never swore that I remember, but boy, that bitch in Jeep.
I seen him last Sunday for the first time in, 10 years. He looks good. He was up the Janesville Mall.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to him too and get some of his stories. I bet he's got some.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any stories on Dad?
You mean what he done?
Oh, yeah.
You mean with cars or what?
Oh, anything around the place.
Oh,
anything
gee,
funny? Or
Did he strain the frame or bend the frame on his Buick Limited one time?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay, you've already told us about that, Craig.
Daddy disagreed with me, and I said, no, Irv stood there with tears in his eyes as Dad went across the contours.
He twisted it.
Yeah.
But another time I remember, too, that he got a red Buick Limited. And he don't know what happened himself, but all of a sudden he was going backwards through a barbed wire fence. Remember that?
Well, I know what happened then.
What? You slid, Dovin.
I was coming down. I was coming back from a breeders' meeting, Rock County breeders' meeting, late at night. I was on the board of directors, and I was sleeping. I was coming down that road that runs along parallel to J. I was driving south, and it comes to a dead end on County Road. Anyway, it was slippery, and I didn't realize how slippery, and I came up with this key, and I put on my brakes, and I slid, and I turned around, and I slid backward off of the road, and there was a big ditch there with just one crossing on it, and it couldn't have been any wider than, well, a third of this room, about 12 feet maybe. And I slid through there, and as soon as I started to slide, and I knew I was a goner, I kept my eye. And I heard some scraping, and the car came to a standstill. I opened my eyes and looked around, and I didn't know whether I was looking northeast, south, or west. I finally oriented myself, and I found that I, instead of having the car headed south, I was now headed north. And I was in a field, and I slid under the barbed wire fence, and the barbed wires had been elevated over the top of my car. It was an old fence. And I had wires right across my windshield, and I had missed the road sign by about a foot or two. So I got into the little pocket of the car, and I had a pair of wire nippers there. I got out of the car and took the fence and drove home. And for a year after that, every once in a while I'd see in the paper about somebody was arrested for inattentive driving or for damaging property or something, or sliding through a fence. And here I slid through the fence, and all I had was a couple scratches on the top of my car.
Left it, didn't tell the farmer whose fence you'd cut.
Oh, I didn't. What do you mean, a couple scratches? I had to repaint that whole car.
Oh, did you?
Why, sure. Don't you remember I had such a job matching that color? That was a maroon.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't, and a metallic paint, and you got to be real good when you spray that. Or you get too much silver or too much metallic in it, and they wouldn't blend in together. I think I sprayed that top four times before I got it to come out right.
Well, I couldn't have timed it or spaced it any better, because I only had a narrow place to go across the ditch, and then it was an old fence, and there were signposts on each side, and I slid between them without touching them, drove the car home.
Yeah, then there was another time that you went bird hunting, and you had that was a 58 Buick Limited, gray one, grayish blue, and somebody just wound up the whole back of your trunk. You stopped right in front of them or something.
Off in the photo.
Yeah. And I straightened that one out.
Was that the car that I shot the, not the muffler off, but the pipe that ran from?
Well, you've done that quite often, going over those
contours. I shot it with my shotgun.
No, that was the time that you was cleaning your gun and you shot the hole right through the transmission.
No transmission. No.
Yes, it was. Right through the transmission cover and muffler. And you had the guy check it out, and all he did was fix your muffler. And when you come home, I looked up there and I seen we had to pull the motor. And how you got home, I don't know, that the transmission didn't fall out. But he'd shot a hole right through the
lucky when he had these accidents, he didn't shoot through somebody.
It wasn't where the liquid was, he was up ahead by the bell housing there.
Yeah, well, all I remember was that we knocked a pipe to pieces, and I had to go all over the neighboring town to South Dakota to find somebody, and then I found somebody about a blank end path.
He welded it up for you.
And he welded it up and tightened it up, but I didn't know that I damaged anything except the exhaust pipe.
Yeah, we pulled a motor on that, and then you went to Chicago one time with the same car.
No, we're talking about a Chandler.
A what?
We're talking about a Chandler that I drove to Chicago.
No. Right. This one
by the place.
This one here.
This is a blue Cadillac one.
No, this was the Buick yet. Or was it a Cadillac?
Well, go on.
This was a Buick. Because I won't forget this. You come in and you said to me that there's something smoking real bad under the hood. And you had to go back to Chicago again the next day, or the day after, I don't remember what it was. Yeah, it must have been the day after. Because I lifted up the hood and here there was a great big hole in the side of the motor where he'd knocked a connecting rod right out through the side. And I went down to Los Park junkyard and I bought another motor, had that motor in the car that night, so yeah, he was going somewhere. And I had it within an hour before you wanted to go. And you couldn't believe that it was ready to run. And I give up.
You make me sound pretty.
I know. Give $100 for that motor, and a Chevrolet motor was $150.
The perfect man in the outfit, Rob.
I couldn't figure it out. Because, see, they didn't sell them. The motor home.
You'd go down and buy them out of the car that had burnt or.
Or it was wrecked. Hit a train or something.
Or a car that was wrecked or burnt or hit a train or something. And pick them up cheaper that way.
It was much cheaper than overhauling them, because the one that I got for your Buick, and you had 30,000 on it, I can remember that. I got one out of a car that only had about 9,000 miles on it. It had burned up.
Well, do you remember the Buick that had all of the, I think it was a 58. All of the chrome on it, the most chrome I've ever seen on a car.
That was the most beautiful car you ever owned.
And that had hydraulic lift, and you could lift the thing about 8 inches.
Yeah.
That's the one Craig says you broke the frame on, or bent the frame on.
That's when he twisted the frame on it. They pulled the body bolts loose out of it, that's what happened. Because Ron,
what were you going to say about it?
Up, he'd taken turn the air, and had a mechanism on the dash to turn the air up. And that would raise that car 18 inches off from the ground. And Ron thought that was really something. He had a Jeep. He could drive through ditches or anywhere with it. Well, he did. He would go down through the contours and see Bob George or... No, wait a minute. Gilbert was here then. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. And that car went anywhere he put it.
But anyway, that was a device that they have taken off of cars. I don't think they have any hydraulic lifts anymore.
They have them on Limiteds is all. Cadillac Limiteds. Limousines, I meant to say.
Yeah. Because about two or three times...
you kept blowing bags on it.
The bags were blowing. Not my fault.
No, but...
But when the bags were blown, then you dropped right down on the axle and you had no springs on it or anything else.
Because I drove it to Janesville I don't know how many times right on the axle. And the last time we took it up, he took all the mounts and put new springs in it for you. But I think the company furnished them, didn't they? Because they were defective.
Do you have any stories about the volunteer fire department there being in the building and things that went on?
In the building?
Well, they were in the other end of the garage there.
Yeah.
You folks built the building.
Yeah, right. We built the building.
Yeah.
On the tail end of the garage.
You built the garage too, didn't you?
No.
Okay. That was built the year before I come there.
Okay, and then they built the building and...
But we extended the north end of the building.
For the
fire department. Well, we had it in a screened-in area in the north end of the building first. Mm-hmm. Then we was thinking about getting another truck. So we had to have more room, and Ron says, no way you can cheat me out of any more space. So we built the building. There's more beer cans in that wall than there is cement blocks. Oh, we'd have a party there every night, sitting laying blocks, and they'd fill the holes with beer cans.
That's a good story, Grandpa's farm with the beer cans.
Never turn that down.
Well, the beer can collector's paradise.
There is. That thing is full of them.
They used to blow off the whistle how often? At noon, didn't you?
Yeah, every noon we tested it.
Uh-huh.
That was 12 o'clock test. That was just for the siren. Then at 6 o'clock we had radio test at night.
Mm-hmm.
That was for all the trucks. Well, that was
so nobody should have a fire right at noon.
Well, it wouldn't make any difference because your radios would go off.
Uh-huh.
But,
call a girl.
Really?
Solvent, denying, you know, spamming.
Yeah, well, there were 7 phones. You had one in the office, didn't you? And we had one. Roy had one.
Mary McCall had one.
Yeah, she had one. Bob McKelch had one.
Gilbert had one.
Yeah, and then Gilbert had. Well, no, Gilbert didn't. We tried to get him on the department, and they wouldn't let him go on because he wasn't a citizen.
I thought they had a phone, though.
No.
Like, well,
imagine
that.
In a town, in a small township, that is man as fine as Gil.
Right. I know it. And he was the most wonderful guy to put on there because he was right there all the time. And he was very enthused over the department. But there was rules in there that you could not have a guy unless he was a citizen.
Huh. How strange.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hurt my feelings, really.
Well, it was always exciting for the office. We had the office upstairs over the milk house.
Yeah.
And when Paul would come in and the siren would start blowing and then the truck would pull out. And
Helen Tapp could tell you just when it went off and when you come back.
And we'd all pile out on the back porch there.
Throw me a cigarette, honey. Oh, yeah, we used to have some great times at that fire department.
No.
What's this?
You said you don't know how they ran that pancake feed this year without you.
Just one missing, that's all.
Dave didn't make it either.
Yeah, Dave, and he ain't helped for the last 3 years.
He came sat with Irv that day at the hospital. He was up to see his mom, and he come down and visit with Irv, and he said, I think it's more important I'm up here than
Do you have any stories you remember on any of the other men? Were you around? John Baker had left by the time you came, hadn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't there.
Any colorful characters or...
Oh,
interesting stories?
We had a lot of them down in the barn.
Who, for instance?
What was her name? Kilpatrick? No.
Oh, yeah. Kirkpatrick.
Kirkpatrick. That was Dick Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, he comes to when Pat feeds over.
Right. He's he works with her now, down to Warner's. He's been there, well, no, in the same next department. Is he?
I never could think of his name, and he always talked from the
final
asshole.
Oh, he was a wild guy.
You thought you told us when they had a reunion, and I said, well, I've known a few times, one for the 50th anniversary. Well, then right away, then rang the bell, that's
what you were. What's the story on him? That must be the Dick I've got mentioned in my diary sometimes, but I couldn't place it.
Well, he drank quite a lot, don't you remember?
Nope, I don't remember. I didn't work in the barn much at all.
Oh, the best time we had, though, was we used to have somebody stand guard. We'd play cards at noon and watch for Grandpa so he wouldn't catch us in there. We'd be in the men's room in the, well, what did you call it? Like the sun porch there? What was that? In the big house.
The one where you came in off the sidewalk there?
Yeah.
the men's room sort of it was, where they...
The men's lounge or something.
The men's lounge, yeah.
We used to play cards and stuff in there. And we always had somebody watch when Grandpa come. He wouldn't catch us.
That's right, because you couldn't have card playing and...
There nobody smoked or drank.
No bad language.
No.
Well, that's at night. You know, and I had all those fellas. Gilbert and brother. Who did I have? Benny, father. We had quite a gang there one time.
Yeah,
that's when
was,
Irby was small.
Then there was a Norwegian guy. Oh, the one that I really liked.
The one from Denmark? What was his name?
That was Gilbert's brother.
Well, the one from Denmark.
Not Gilbert. He didn't have a brother here.
Huh?
Gilbert never had a brother here.
Yeah, he did.
Gilbert's brother was there for a while. It was
Gilbert, and I bought his car. Sure you do. Great big square jawed guy. Great big guy. 6 foot. What was his name?
He was from Denmark too at the same time.
Who was this other fellow you're saying you liked so much?
Jim. That was a guy I liked. Was Gilbert's brother. We used to sneak down and get a beer once in a while. And so he was going back to Norway, and he waited the last minute to sell his car. And I don't know what he wanted. He wanted $300 or $400 for it, and all I had was $60 in my pocket. And he took the $60 and threw me the title to it, and took off in a taxi cab to go down to get the train to go to the airport, the bus.
Well, do you remember Svoboda?
Svoboda?
He lived in the big house.
Yeah.
And he got married and we threw a wedding for him in the church. He didn't have any money.
Right. What was the girl's name that he married? I met them here just a short time ago, Ron. He was asking me how you was.
Well, I got one letter from him after he was fired or quit or something. Deliberate letter, and he ended up by telling me that I was a disaster.
Is that right?
Well, was he the one that flushed the corn down the toilet?
You remember having to clean out the...
No, that wasn't him.
That was Svoboda.
That put the corn down the toilet?
Yeah. He swacked a couple of bushels of corn because he had a little piece of land up north, and he was going to take the corn up there, and then he chickened out, and he wanted to get rid of the corn, so he poured it down the toilet, and then it swelled up in the discharge pipe that ran through the cellar.
Yeah,
almost poured it out. So we had to break that all out.
Right, I remember that.
Dig it out.
We rotted it out as much as we could, and then we had to break elbows to get it the rest of the way out. But then Gilbert's brother flushed a grapefruit into the toilet. Remember that? Out in the back room?
Okay, go on with that story. That sounds good. Why'd you do that?
Well, he just loved grapefruit, so he just cut it right in two, and then he'd throw the, after he'd the inside of it out, he'd throw it in the toilet and flush it down. Well, that made the best cap there ever was. It wouldn't go nowhere. And we just stopped the toilet and run right over in the floor.
Didn't they have any indoor plumbing in Norway?
No, I guess not. I don't know.
Gilbert could have taught him.
But, well, Gilbert had gone back at that time. Gilbert wasn't here.
And the brother was.
And the brother was still here.
Well, what'd you do about his bad habit?
Oh, we had to take the toilet off and turn it upside down and dump it out till we found out what it was in there. So we had to explain it to him how to do that. And then Benny Harder, he used to take and build a fire with corn cobs. They call him that little pig. It's a sidearm heater off in the hot water heater.
And the water hot, so the guy could take a shower
right
back there.
So he would build a fire in there, and he'd get the chimney red hot all the way through the kitchen, all the way back to the main chimney. Well, now we used to have a lot of excitement there for a while. And then George, he came home drunk one night.
George Schreiber?
Yeah.
And he lived in that little old trailer?
No, he was living upstairs.
He was living upstairs at that time.
I sold him the trailer after I moved in the big house.
Okay.
That was my old trailer.
Uh-huh.
But George come home drunk one night, and Olive had just come back from town with a whole bushel of tomatoes.
Oh, I picked them.
Where did you have them? I thought you got them downtown.
No, I didn't buy them.
Well, it don't matter anyhow.
Oh, it's that big garden.
Here are these tomatoes set, and George fell into them. And he smashed it, well, the whole top of them. Here he goes up the stairway with his hands with tomatoes all the way up to his bedroom.
Followed the tomato trail, huh?
Yeah. Yep. Then there was another one, too, that used to...
That would be one with the transform the Grandpa and Grandma's day, Great Grandma.
What was his name? This was a guy from Denmark that used to go up, and he didn't know where this register went, so he would empty all the corn and the oats out of his pants cuff down the heat register. And here it was dropping right on top of a refrigerator in the kitchen.
My kitchen.
It was one of those cold air registers that would let the heat from downstairs come up through.
And he thought it was just a register, and he was dumping it out of his pants.
There was all that corn and oats and all kinds of dirt all over all the time.
Well, we used to have a lot of excitement over there.
You see, Olive and her were running the big house for a while.
Yeah.
That's when we, those guys, I said, even when we'd confine 7 days a week, to start out, I really enjoyed. Those fellows were so nice. Murphy was little, and one would be taking care of him, and one would help me with the dishes that night so we could get my work done and get him to bed. And so we'd get the card game. You know, it's just like a happy family. I don't remember what kind of cards.
Well, we had seven at one time. Remember?
Yeah.
It was set. In fact, we got a picture of Murphy hanging on the cupboards down there, up there.
Gilbert, they used to
pin him out with his
coveralls
right up on the latches.
We developed
here, Gilbert was laying on the floor ready to catch him if he fell. And one of the other guys took a picture of him. Hanging on the cupboard.
I don't know, the store's up there. They were taking money. We got the picture developed. There he was hanging by the, just by the drop seat of his little coverall, hanging on the knob of the cupboard up there. There he was, just hanging by his buttonhole.
Them guys would toss him from one to the other. They had a ball with him. Isn't that something? Jergy.
Jergy?
Jergy.
Was he a communist?
Is that his name?
Oh, I think that was.
What was his name?
Well, it was a Jet. Well, that was when Bob George was there. Gents was the great.
No. No, that ain't Gents. Gents was a tall, slender guy. This guy was a great big strapping guy. He was a big guy. And he had square jaws. Boy, he was a real he-man.
Gilbert's brother. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'll go see Gilbert and ask him.
You're going to see him?
I'm going to go see Gilbert, yeah.
Oh, he's wrote me so many times. Come on over, he says, we'll get in the bottom of the vat after we dump it. And we can just sit here and get drunker than hell, he says.
Well, does he run a farm or a brewery?
No, he's got a... Well, the way he explains it to me, it's made out of potatoes, like potato schnapps. It's alcohol.
Well, he doesn't have this big farm co-op that he used to have. Then.
Yes, it's a farm co-op, but...
Well, he does a distillery right there.
Yes, he distills there, and he has a contract with the government to buy all the alcohol that he produces.
Yeah. But he's got a big home there, and then he's got one up in the mountains and a summer home. Where was it, the last letter he wrote to us?
I had a letter at Christmas, but the only time we ever corresponded, I was at Christmas time.
And they had another one after he got home, a girl.
You hear from
Dr.
Yeah.
Well, he writes to you quite often?
Christmas.
Well, that's good.
Let's change the subject a little bit, but were you the guy that found the body in the corn shocks at Obeck's?
Yeah, I wish I was.
Well, tell us about that.
We're trying to clear up
what is Oscar's last name? Another half-witted guy that worked for Ruby Obeck.
Oh.
Oscar something.
Beck, no. Well, when he quit Ruby's, well, he went out and worked for Farm with the town, and I lost track of him. Yeah, I haven't seen him.
Well, doesn't matter his last name. What were you doing around the corn shocks?
You know, hauling them in.
No, well, let's let Irv tell me.
Sorry. They were getting ready to take the corn stalks. What was he going to do with them?
Well, they had the shocks. Cool. They had the shocks, and he would go out every other day or so. And
they were getting ready to shred, wasn't they?
Well, they'd bring them into the barn, and then he would husk them at the barn, and use the stalks for bedding or something. Anyway, he'd bring the shocks in. And he tipped over this one shock, and here was a dead man. Or you did.
Now wait.
He didn't tip it over. No, I was coming down the road from your house. We had pump trouble up to your house. And he come running out to the road and he says, "Hey, there's a guy's foot sticking out of the corn stalk up on the top of the hill." I said, "Well, maybe there's somebody laying in there sleeping." So I went up there with him. He was with me.
He was scared, huh?
Oh, sure he was scared. And so was I. Well, then we just pushed it back far enough we could see the guy laying in there and his head half covered with dirt. So we come back down and to the house and we called the sheriff. And that's when you come up there. You and I and Johnny sat.
It was crazy.
Dad and I just gotten home from medical school.
No, you were still studying. Oh, yeah, you were just coming home on, it was on a weekend.
Yeah, I just come
right
home.
Because you says, "Well, give him to me and I'll take him back up to the university and I'll take him apart." I won't forget that as long as I live. But that even shook me up so bad I started thinking of my Army career and seeing all them guys. I just couldn't take it anymore before they got it done. And then they come up there with
bulldozers. Before they got what done? The guy out of there?
The guy out of there and getting, well, they even took dirt to look for bullets.
Uh-huh.
And they took this dirt somewhere and sifted it, didn't they?
I don't remember.
And, well, they found bullets in it.
So he wasn't just some itinerant that...
Oh, no. I went in there
to go to sleep and had a heart attack or something.
I followed that up. It was some guy in Iowa had shot him.
Well, they found the guy?
They found the guy. It was out in Iowa somewhere.
Well, I remember the neighbors all and you guys all.
The Vagabond. I wasn't.
More like the Vagabond, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Well, he brought him all the way from Iowa to put him in the corn shop
well,
there?
Well, this I don't know. I never found out they did it.
But they caught the murderer.
They found the guy that did it or was with him. And I guess it was.
Anyway, all of you guys, you kid Oscar, and as I say, you were a little dim in the head. And I think as I look back now, that you were pretty cruel to him.
I think so too, Ron, really.
Because he was, you talked about, well, Oscar, did you put him in there?
Yeah.
Well,
do you think that's the reason for him quitting too?
No.
Don't you? But, yeah, I think we were a little harsh on him, teasing him about it. But it shook me up too.
You know, I saw Mrs. Dick Waltz the other day, and he said, "I remember when you bought the Obeck farm, but we wanted that farm, but we got in out of too late." And I knew you wanted it, and I got in out of it just as quick as I knew that it was available.
Yeah, right.
Tell me the story about when the silo split. You had something to do with that.
Oh yeah, that was 2 o'clock in the morning. That started, wasn't it?
Here,
how did we find it out?
When they went down to milk. Well, here the
puddle on the...
2 o'clock in the morning?
Well...
No, before they started to milk. Because we hindered them even milking there, trying to put bands and stuff around it.
Well, it took us a while to get the band because somebody, you or somebody, knew where there was a silo being torn down.
Yeah, over here by...
Well, it doesn't matter. Anyway, we were able to get the bands.
Yeah, I remember taking the bands down in Stanley Zoot's down at
Nielsen's Engineering. He cut me some long threaded bolts to put in there. Well, when we first started, we had to have extra long bolts to pull it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept taking them up. And then when we got it pretty near closed up, we had to change the bolts because we ran out of thread.
So mm-hmm.
That's the way we saved it. And the whole thing split and pushing the whole barn apart.
Yeah.
Well, as I remember, it wasn't really split.
It was cracked. There was a crack there, enough to let liquid come out of it. And that was the first year that we, and the last year that we put...
silage in it.
That wet silage from Janesville.
But that was filled all the way to the top, Ron. She would have split the whole barn wide open if that would have finished opening up in that crack.
Yeah.
Well, we worked all that, the rest of that night and the next day on it to get it closed up to where we got it so it just seeped. The cows are having a ball licking up that the alcohol.
They getting drunk?
Yeah. They were having
it had already done enough fermenting that
oh, they... Oh, sure, because see, it took about 7 or 8 days to start to get that full, and it was all the way to the top. That's what we were so scared about.
The crack went all the way to the top?
No, the silage was filled all the way to the top.
Oh!
But if it would have split, see, it would have went right straight down through both floors.
And would have cracked the barn right open like an egg, huh?
Oh, yeah, it would have split the barn wide open.
Well, the only thing that kept the silo together was the 3/4 inch reinforcing rods that were up every 2 feet.
Yeah,
all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
That was inside of the cement, though.
Yeah.
But we didn't know exactly where they were and how they were up and down ways. And I don't think there was any in there, was there?
Any up and down ones?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No.
But you could tell where the...
ridges were.
Look at that. They went around the silo because they were the steps on the chute.
That's the way you climb the chute.
That's
on
right.
Those.
But then we thought later that they didn't go only in over the doorways. That they were just short stubs. We didn't know that they went all the way around because we tried to put a hacksaw blade down in that crack and see if we could find a rod through there, and we never found one. Don't you remember that? That's the reason why we really hurried fast we could to get it drawn up.
Now those bands, you had to put several bolts in those bands because they didn't go all the way around.
Oh, sure.
I've checked them out. It takes about 3 bands to go all the way around.
The rod in between them.
Yeah. So you had to rush.
In what year was that? I missed that completely.
You should remember that.
I've said it before Grandpa dies, but Grandpa was dead by then, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Must have been on
it was before trip. Bob George come. So that would be in 56. Bob George came.
Were you there when we had some...